Hello, welcome to the Lone Show. I'm your host, John Malone. In this episode, no regulars, because reasons, as always. As for our guest, he's from Bulgaria, currently in Portugal. He is an author and health practitioner. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Christian Yordanov.
Thank you, Peter. Nice, great to be on here with you.
Me too. So, how's life?
Life is good. I'm just back from the playground. I was kicking the ball with my daughter, who's 2.5 years old. So she's only started kicking this last week, which is really fun. So yeah, life is pretty good.
Oh, that's nice. Is there anything you've been up to this week or up to recently?
Yeah, so I just published my second book about a month ago. It's called How to Actually Live Longer, Volume 1. So today I actually got 40 copies of it from if you know from the in the mail that I'm going to be going around the area to cafes and gyms and spas and whatever, and we'll be kind of promoting the book. And a couple of weeks ago, I was in Mexico for a conference called Anarcapulco, which is all about freedom, anarchy, and that kind of stuff, truth. So I was promoting the book there. So I'm pretty stoked. Already some people are, it's ruffled a few feathers because it goes against the grain a lot of what we're taught by the mainstream. So that always makes me happy.
Ah, all right, pretty cool, pretty cool. And what was the inspiration for you to get indulge yourself in the knowledge in this particular field?
So I've been studying longevity and all this basically health biohacking stuff for I guess 6 years at this point, very intensely, of course. And the biggest impetus for this was I basically in my late teens and all my throughout my 20s, I just destroyed I squandered them. I was destroying my health, destroying my body with terrible food, alcohol, smoking, partying. And I kind of got the memo that I can't do that forever in my early 30s. And over the years throughout my 30s, then I started kind of picking up the pieces and, starting to fix my lifestyle and my terrible vices and habits. And this book kind of, it was on the back burner because about 5 years ago, someone in my family was diagnosed or suspected to be on the autistic spectrum, a young boy. He was only about 4 at the time, I think. And that set me off onto the autism path for a few years. I was researching that very deeply, very intensely. And that was my first book, was all about autism. So that was published in 2020. So I had a kid since then and got married, so a lot of things got in the way. But I've always, like, this entire time I was thinking I want to write something more about longevity and health optimization. And this was this opportunity last year in around September is when I started. And very quickly I said to myself, damn it, no, this can't be a big project. It has to be a short book so people will read it, and so I won't go insane trying to research and write it. So it's a couple hundred pages. Short book, you could read it in a week, and I put it together in 4.5 months. So, to be perfectly honest, I'm quite proud of the project.
Wow, fantastic. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
So, where do you see yourself 20 years from now?
Whoa, what kind of a question? Jeez, dude, you just threw a massive curveball at me, man. I have absolutely no idea. I stopped thinking about that after the events of 2020, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah,
I had
that event.
I had so many kind of I had a vision and plans and for the future and writing a bunch of books on different topics and all that stuff, creating a legacy and a health empire, like the big health authors like Mark Hyman, the Dr. Mark Hyman, and there was another guy I really respect. Anyway, that kind of thing, you know, with 10 books and a big clinic or center for health. So, you know, that was kind of my vision. But after this stuff happened, I don't know anymore. You know, I was into conspiracy stuff before the 2020. So I actually spent quite a long time deep into researching conspiracies and all these topics that a lot of people think are for, you know, crazy people, tinfoil hat wearing idiots, you know. But you very quickly realize that people, not all of them, because there's a lot of disinformation agents in there as well. But a lot of the guys researching these things are very smart. And so I knew there was some kind of plan for, you know, all that stuff for the future. But I just didn't know it was going to be implemented so aggressively. So I honestly don't think about 20 years from now. I really honestly don't know. Which is, I think, to be honest with you, I think that's part of what they want, is they don't want people to see a bright future, which kind of, it makes people easier to control and to steer in directions that you want them to, like, you know, towards pharmaceuticals, towards just ceding their power and letting the authoritarians around them run their lives.
Yes, indeed. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And with the knowledge that you have, what do you plan on doing to make the world, hopefully, a better place?
Well, I want to keep writing books like this and kind of dispelling some of the myths around, mostly around health, because that's kind of my specialty. There's a lot of myths that we, most of us, if you ask anybody on the street, if I ask you, Peter, what do you think is the, what do you think are the most important things to do to extend your life?
What I would do to extend my life?
What do you think? What are the most important things that one should do?
Well, firstly, and it's easy to do, is drink plenty enough water, because it helps hydrate your body, and 80% of your body is full of water anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Get plenty of exercise to build up muscle, so that way when you get into your elderly years, you don't have any physical related ish back pains or any physical pain throughout your elder years.
Mm-hmm.
And eat a balanced diet. Don't just eat fruit or vegetables. Have some protein as well, and maybe a decent amount of fats. Just like, just gives you the essential vitamins and nutrients that you need to progress physically.
Okay. All right. Well, that was actually well answered. So, you know, fair play. Because a lot of people would say something like fasting is the fountain of youth. Or, you know, some people might say that calorie restriction is one of the top ways to extend your lifespan. And if you go and search into the into the scientific literature, you will very quickly find that. Or if you start digging around mainstream health press, let's say, and you type in how to extend your life, et cetera, you will quickly stumble on things like that, you know, fasting, regular fasting, calorie restriction. And these are honestly, these are just fallacies. It's incorrect that fasting will extend your lifespan as a human, or calorie restriction will extend your lifespan. The evidence, the scientific evidence, is very poor, because while it's true that in their experiments they do achieve those end results, those experiments generally are very poorly done. So usually the animals that they test these calorie restriction or fasting or intermittent fasting regimes, these animals eat very toxic diets. So we're talking a lot of seed oils that could be rancid already, fish oil, very low quality fish meal, a lot of gluten, grains, quite a natural diet, synthetic vitamins, and very poor quality minerals. So these animals are eating basically glorified toxic slop is what I call it in the book. And so then imagine you have rats or monkeys or whatever, and those can eat as much as they want of this toxic slop. And then you have another group, which is the experimental group, and they are then either fasted or they're calorie restricted or intermittent fasting regimes are implemented. And it stands to reason, I think any sane person will be like, yes, well, if an animal eats less poison over the course of its life, it's going to do better than an animal that eats not just any amount, but any amount it wants to. It's called ad libitum or ad libitum feeding, where the animals eat as much as they want. And there's a big confounding factor there, is those animals tend to overeat and get fat. And then obviously that carries with it a lot of metabolic complications, from insulin resistance all the way to diabetes and so on and so forth. So they're comparing fasted animals that eat less poison to animals that eat a ton of this crap, get fat, and become diseased. And yeah, of course, those fasting and calorie restriction experiments are going to show better results for those animals. So this is then taken by mainstream scientific press, mainstream health press, and it's spun where we read it and we're like, oh, I have to start fasting and intermittent fasting and have to eat less and blah blah blah, and I'm gonna live longer. But it's actually very poor science that now it's so ingrained in the zeitgeist that it will probably take decades to undo this damage. It's like the cholesterol stuff that started in the 50s, 60s, and it's still going on.
Wow, madness.
Yeah.
And going on the toxic slop that you call it,
Yeah.
what other toxic slops should people think about not consuming, at least, to ensure their health and safety?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's such an important point, because most people eat a lot of plant oils, and a lot of health quote unquote gurus out there are saying that plant fats and plant oils are superior to animal fats, and it's just not true. So we have been surviving and basically thriving as humans for probably hundreds of thousands of years, if not more. And we've been mostly eating animal foods and fruit. When you think about it, we've been eating fruit, and animal flesh for the most part for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. The difference, though, is a lot of the fruit was smaller, probably more bitter, perhaps more seasonal. There was probably nuts, but they were very seasonal, so they would come around, let's say late autumn. So this is seems like this is what we were eating: fish, ruminant animals, whatever we can catch, a carrion, rotting flesh, dead carcasses, this kind of stuff, right? Actually, the acidity of the human stomach is very close to that of something like a hyena, a scavenger, right? So we have a very acidic stomach, which kind of is a clue to what we were eating back in the day. So these plant oils are very much, these plant fats are very foreign to us. So if you look at what they contain a lot of polyunsaturated fats, omega 6s and some omega 3s, and these are very easily damaged or oxidized. So they go rancid, these oils, even in your fridge. So you can bet that we're 37 degree, almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit, humans. That's actually quite warm. And these, if it, the more of these fat animal plants we eat, the more of them get incorporated into our cells, tissues, brain, mitochondria, muscles, so on. So the more vulnerable we become to the rancidity of these fats. So as they go rancid or oxidize in our body, that causes damage, and that causes a chain reaction of damage to other membranes around them, other fatty acids around them, that we need to stop with some type of antioxidant enzyme or vitamin E or vitamin C. So most people right now are exposed to way too many of these omega-6s. I think this is probably one of the gravest problems that humanity is tackling, and one of the biggest contributors to the chronic disease crisis. So when I say plant oils, high polyunsaturated fats, oils, and foods, I'm talking about all your oils. So from sunflower and soybean to safflower and corn oil, grapeseed oil, flaxseed, canola, corn, walnut, all of these are bad. Peanut oil, these are bad. We should not eat them. We should not cook with them, especially because they oxidize even more, and these toxic byproducts of the oxidation process are very toxic. They're implicated in almost any disease or condition you can think of, from depression to Alzheimer's and heart disease and cancer. So I think this is probably the most important thing. And most people now, okay, not most, but a lot of people know to not buy sunflower oil, but they go out, they eat at salad bars, they eat at restaurants, they order takeout, and that is almost invariably prepared with these oils. So I think the most important piece of advice I can give to the listener would be just try to steer clear of them. If you're in a restaurant, order something like steak and tell the person serving you to tell the chef or whoever's cooking it, just use butter or coconut oil. And if you're ordering a salad, tell them you're allergic to whatever soybean oil they're going to use, and tell them to make sure if they don't have olive oil, don't use any oil, and so on and so forth. Just you have to really understand where these oils are, so in what foods, prepared foods, packaged foods, restaurant foods, and steer clear of them as best as you can, because even like 10, 20 grams a day is way, way too much. That's definitely going to lead to disease sooner or later. It could be decades, but it will lead to disease sooner or later. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm absolutely with you on that one.
Mm.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
If I could live anywhere in the world, this is another difficult question after the whole 2020 events. But let me think. I would probably, geez, that's a good question, man. I think probably somewhere in South America, somewhere where it's safe. You're in the jungle. You're not in the jungle. You're kind of mountainous region, hilly region, not too many crazy critters and gross things that scare the bejesus out of you. Nice people, clean, fresh air, untouched by industrial civilization, all that nonsense, and somewhere where you could just really connect back with nature. Something like, I think maybe something like Peru would be calling out to me, something like that.
Wow.
Good question. Interesting question.
Yeah, thank you. And yes, it's quite a view to behold too. What could you give a 40-minute presentation on without any preparation?
Oh, quite a lot of things. I could give you a presentation on how to, for parents of autistic children, how to really help their children with diet supplementation, lab testing, sleep hygiene, stuff like that. I could give you a presentation on longevity, what to do and what not to do to increase your lifespan and health span, because I just wrote a book about it. A lot of topics around health. I could probably give you a 40-minute presentation on how to detox your body or how to improve your gut health. That could be probably a 2-hour presentation. Today, I recorded a 45-minute podcast on my show for all about why fasting, intermittent and water fasting, why they're actually harmful. So I could do, honest to God, I could do like dozens of topics, at least.
Fabulous. Nice to see you've come fully prepared.
Yes. Yeah.
What has been the furthest that you traveled to that's furthest away from where you're originally from?
Well, I think that would be Mexico. I was just in Mexico a couple of weeks back, and that was the first time across the Atlantic and first time to North America. And it was quite an ordeal. Three planes, a train. And it was kind of scary because we landed in Acapulco, and they had the hurricane back in October, which was a category 5, I think. It was quite an ordeal for the poor people there. And there was quite a lot of gang or cartel type violence or fears. So I went there, I got out of the airport, and I saw like army guys with like machine, like pickup trucks, and they had like a guy like on a turret. So I was crapping my pants, bro. So that would be that would be it.
All right then. Very good. Have you ever heard of a drink called banana friche?
Never.
That's all right. I get that a lot from a lot of people.
What is that?
So it is a banana flavored smoothie / milkshake that has all the tingly sensations in the world.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it sure does. How did you spend your last birthday?
Last birthday, I don't even remember. I think I was just hanging out with my wife and my kid. After the age of 30, you don't really, at least I don't really care much for birthdays. It just reminds you that you're getting 1 year older. So I think that's all I did, was just hang out with my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed. If you could travel back in time, what decade would you want to live in?
Okay. I think either, I think probably the beginning of the 19th century or the 20th century, so 1900 to 1910. I'd love to see what the world was like before the big increase in electricity and the cars and petrol, burning of petrol, and just want to see what the world was like back then. I don't think I would see many obese people or too many diseased people, which would be fascinating to look at.
All right then. I'd say the same, I guess, kind of, either way. Have you ever met anyone famous?
I met a few famous people in Mexico. Well, famous in small circles, I guess. There was a couple of social media influencers that are quite famous in the truth / conspiracy / I don't know what to call it, world. I guess the truth movement, if you want to call it that. So there was there's a few guys that have been around for a couple of decades now, and I got to meet them and talk to them for a bit, take some pictures with them. So I don't even know if I should say the names, because they're famous for me because they're like heroes of mine. But I don't think most people would even recognize those names.
I don't think many people would know about the so-called mainstream celebrities that they are today, because it is subjective who is famous to our eyes, and also subjective to who's famous to other people's eyes.
Exactly. Like if you sometimes people tell me, you know, XYZ person that's a singer or actor, I'm like, no, I don't even know these people, because I don't listen to mainstream music, and I don't really listen to, or I don't really watch many or if any movies at all, really, to be honest, or TV shows or Netflix. So I wouldn't have zero idea who they would be talking about.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. What hobby would you get into if time and money weren't an issue?
Well, Jesus, that's so many things. I think probably one thing I would love to go back to is learning musical instruments, DJing and producing electronic music, techno music. I'd love to spend be able to buy a bunch of cool synthesizers and mess around for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days and make some pretty cool music. Something I wish I had done more of back in my 20s when I was into it. So that would be that. And otherwise, oh man, so many things. I'd love to scuba dive, and spear fishing is something I've wanted to do. Shooting guns of various kinds, flying a helicopter, learning how to fly a helicopter, that would be another one that I'd love to do. I could honestly, I could go on and on and on. I change hobbies every 3 months or so. So I have a lot of varied interests. So yeah, I could really go on and on and on here. But I think the music piece, learning how to play drums, relearning guitar, piano. I always wanted to play piano, like a nice big grand piano. That would be pretty epic to learn. So I think I would focus on the music.
Sweet. What is something that most people consider to be a luxury, but you don't think you could live without?
A luxury. Well, actually, I take a lot of supplements, right? So I spend quite a few bucks every month on supplements, and I think a lot of people are like, well, you're just creating very expensive urine that way. And I honestly, I've had times in my life where I only spent money on food, supplements, and bills just to kind of, because of financial setbacks and so on. But this was in more recent years, of course, after I got the memo about the importance of health. But I never thought it's an expense, it's more a necessity. I really believe that's supplementing your diet with high quality nutrient supplements is it's not even an option in the modern world anymore. It should be as important as, buying toilet paper, buying basic groceries, buying whatever, paying your electricity. I really think we have to set aside at least 100 or so dollars or euros or pounds, and at least, and just spend that on high quality supplements to fill in the gaps where the modern industrial food supply has created gaps.
Yeah,
Yeah.
indeed. What is the best way to start the morning?
For me?
Yeah.
For me, it's ideally to wake up a couple of hours before everybody else, so have some quiet time, have a couple of cups of coffee with nice milk or cream, hang out in front of either my red light therapy lamp or out on the balcony, get some sunlight, and read a book or learn something, something about whatever, about esoteric stuff, philosophy, health, the human body, just something that is enriching, practical, or enlightening. And yeah, a bit of movement, going out with my dog for a walk, and then waking up my kid and, hanging out with my family. I think that's the best way to start the morning.
That's nice. And that is all we have for this episode. It was great to have you on, Christian. Talking about your work as an author and, of course, a health practitioner and all the advice you have throughout the years. It's been great.
Thank you so much, Peter. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. And until next time, stay tuned for more.